It's week zero. Everyone's excited. So we're going to talk about who's getting fired. Plus some group of five playoff implications and a Spartan sized lawsuit.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Florida man runs the school.
Russ Gellinger.
And I was at the shoe game.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Cost us 80% of our yearly budget to send Ross to ride the train in West Virginia.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to Pod Week Zero here. Gentlemen, we've lived this long. We made it. Congrats for not dying, either of you and our audience.
As far as we know.
The offseason, this offseason almost killed me, though, Dan. It did. It got close to killing me.
Well, thank you for your service.
You can tell it was a rocky offseason given the disproportionate amount of enthusiasm for the week zero slate.
Hey, we're fired. Everyone's fired up for week zero. I always laugh. I'm like, you know, like it's like Maction. It's like November and people are like, I'm not watching, you know, Buffalo, Northern Illinois. I'm like, you'd kill for that thing in about 5 months.
That's right.
Yep.
You'd kill for that thing now.
Any football.
Any football. Always wonder, would the Mac ever go spring? Anyway, we're going to talk a bunch of different stuff. I don't think we got to get into breaking down the whole four game slate here. There's really only one interesting one, Florida State, Georgia Tech, and Ireland. But it is a time of joy. It is a time of celebration. It is a time of excitement around college football. So what we really need is the doom, the gloom, and the misery of Ross Dellinger to step up provide his hot seat list.
Of course.
Here it is. Hope springs eternal, week zero, and Ross is putting out stories on who's getting canned.
Yes.
You're just a joy. You are a joy. And we love you for it. Absolutely. Let's go negative. This is college football. We can't have fun. Look, if you talk to the coaches, it's a disaster. Well, some of you won't be coaches anymore now, will you? You'll be trying to get podcasts and try to compete with us, and you'll lose.
That's right.
You'll lose at that also.
Because they're not negative enough like us.
Got to be negative. Mm-hmm. Right there. Mm-hmm. Right? What was Saban saying? Oh, I want to give coaches an option to express what's really good. Oh, no. We don't need that.
That's right.
No.
Yeah.
What they want is Nick Saban, who knows more than them, to say, yeah, they screwed up.
Yes, that's what we got. Also, membership drive. It is week zero membership drive.
Mm, yes.
Yes. Become a member of the College Football Inquirer. It's free.
Wow.
Doesn't cost anything. We don't even know who you are. You don't even have to put in an email. Just subscribe to something, our pod on Apple or Spotify or wherever, YouTube. I don't care. It's free. Literally nothing. Yeah. You get what you pay for, but it is free. Yeah.
It's worth nothing also.
This is not like a public radio membership drive where, you got to give us a donation and we'll send you a coffee mug. No, it's free, but there's also no coffee mug.
If you want to send us a donation, feel free. We're not getting you a coffee mug, though. Tips are accepted. Tips are accepted. No. Look, we need help. We don't really have a budget for anything. So we don't have advertising. We're not on like big cable network or anything.
Cost us 80% of our yearly budget to send Ross to ride the train at West Virginia. We're busted now. We got nothing left.
We're broke.
Yes.
PRT was free and we can't even afford that. Is it normally free? I don't know. It doesn't matter. So all we have is word of mouth, which is really the only way people become podcast listeners. So your job for all of our service all year round and all our service that's coming up and all of this just incredible fountain of wisdom that we throw out there for free. Find a friend and get them to listen. Find a brother. Find a sister, a father, a mother. I know families listen. You need something to talk to your dad about. Get them listening to this thing.
Anybody. We'll take anybody.
We're not babies.
For your dog. If you've gone to work, your dog's at home. Your parakeet, whatever.
Live, dead, whatever. Pipe it in at the funeral home. Whatever you got to do to up our numbers. We need help. We ask so little of you. If you don't have a friend, go down, like, ride the bus, or go down to the bus stop or something and talk to somebody down there. They're always around. That's it. That's all you got to do. But we actually seriously do need your help. So please spread the word. You know, we're not that bad. And the price is right. Yeah. Inflation, not here, baby. Not a campaign issue around this parts. Still free. 0.0% inflation at the College Football Inquirer. We've solved the problem. You want to complain about how much the head of lettuce costs? Feel free, but it ain't costing anything here. All right, back to Ross being miserable and firing people on the first day. Hot list, Yahoo Sports. Check it out. Also free, sports.yahoo.com. Number one guy in the list, Billy Napier, Florida. Buyout, $25 to $27 million. The seat is, Ross is calling it hot. It's hot and warm on this list. It's really not that long of a list. Ross, explain yourself. I don't think it takes much. Yeah.
Well, this one's kind of easy, right? This one, I think most would agree, when you make calls to agents in the industry and administrators around the country and search firm guys, this is the one that comes up as not just the hottest seat, maybe, but perhaps the move that could create a real domino effect this year and impact so many other programs. We see every year, right? A couple of big power conference school jobs open that create this ripple effect throughout the country. And I think this is the one that you can circle this year. Napier is entering his third year, you know, no longer do you automatically get a fourth season anymore, right? It used to be that entering your fourth year was the one you were judged by in a lot of ways. And now it's your second or third year you're judged by. Florida's going to one bowl game. They've gotten, they missed out of the bowl last year. And so the pressure is on, so to speak. But the price is obviously incredibly stiff, right? And the schedule does not, not necessarily set up for a great year. It's maybe the most difficult last five games of any schedule that I've seen in a long time. Georgia and Jacksonville, at Texas, against LSU, against Ole Miss, at Florida State to finish the year. So it's tough. I don't know what Billy Napier has to get to win-wise, especially considering that schedule. But he needs to, I would imagine he needs to show pretty serious improvement in the team, which is certainly reaching a bowl, if not at least hitting that eight-ish win mark.
Yeah, there is a lot to unpack here, I think, in the Napier situation, starting with the fact that Florida just hasn't been able to get the right guy unless he can turn it around. I'm not saying he can't. I'm not. You know, I don't like giving up on a coach in a season before it starts. If we had done that, Neil Brown never would have started last year at West Virginia. He was number one on the hot seat, and then they had a very good year. And now that whole thing has changed around from pessimism to optimism. Jim Harbaugh was very much on the hot seat 3 years ago and went to the playoff 3 years in a row and won a championship. So don't want to give up right away on Napier and on Florida. But, yeah, you go through the succession of Muschamp, McElwain, Mullen, and then you get to Napier, and I think everybody really felt like that was a good hire, and it just so far hasn't worked out. They were extremely young on defense last year, and that cost them. They didn't capitalize on having Anthony Richardson at quarterback, a top five NFL draft pick his first season, and then they replaced him with Graham Mertz at quarterback. It was a Wisconsin kind of reclamation project, and he wasn't terrible, but he's still Graham Mertz. You know, he's going to give you only so much, I think, there, and he's back as the starter this year. And then, yes, to Ross's point, the schedule is just gruesome. I mean, so how, if you're Florida, do you Do you apply any nuance here, or is it still just, well, we're Florida, we need to win 8, 9, 10 games? Man, you look at that slate, and it's going to be really hard to do, even if your team's pretty good. So if Napier had had this schedule last year and there was still some patience out there, I think you could get past whatever the record would be and say, all right, we'll give them another year. But if this is the third year and you're just getting your head kicked in, it gets a little more difficult. And, hey, they have not been good. They've been pushed around by Kentucky. And that, you know, is the kind of thing that never used to happen to Florida. There was a period of time for like 3 decades where Florida did not beat Kentucky. Maybe not quite that long, but that's been one of those where they've just been dominated. And the way they finished last year, they lost their last 5 games, got blown out by Georgia. Georgia has left them way behind in terms of, you know, what an annual kind of eye-to-eye rivalry there. So there's a lot of issues, but, you know, I think let the cake bake, let the season begin, and let's see where it starts going, starting with that really important first game against Miami.
I guess there's 2 things. One, it's like, everyone sits there and says, oh my God, it's the hardest schedule I've ever seen. You could get to mid-October and not win again and not necessarily be that bad. I mean, at Tennessee and Kentucky before that final stretch too. As you said, I think Kentucky, like Pat, to your point, I think 4 of the last 5 for the Wildcats. You think you're winning it? I'm bullish on the Vols. So you sit there and say, we don't really care. Like, it's one of those years, and I know he has no proven track record, but it's like when everyone got hurt for like the Spurs, like the San Antonio Spurs, you got Greg Popovich, like, oh, all right, we don't have the guys this year. But now we, you know, you don't necessarily get rid of a good coach. And I understand he doesn't have that track record, but that's the thing. I wanted to ask this just generally about Florida football. And they have won 3 national titles, right? Spurrier won one and 2 for Urban. Before Spurrier, historically, very up and down and rarely really that good. There was a little bit of a Charlie Pell era. They were pretty good.
Yeah, they were cheating like crazy, too. Pell got busted.
It's been a few NCAA, collisions through the years. Yeah. I mean, it's called the swamp. It's, you know, it's, I mean, you look at this, there's Galen Hall was a coach, didn't really do too well. Then you brought in Spurrier. Then there was Zook. Then there was Charlie Strong, or not really. Then Urban Meyer. Okay, great. Then Muschamp, Mullen, Napier. What is my question? Why isn't Florida better consistently?
Yeah.
Obviously, they won national titles. They can be great. It's Florida. Tons of talent, tons of fan interest, great campus, great stadium, SEC. Why?
It's a great question. And, you know, I mean, I think that when the Florida Revolution started, late 70s, early 80s, Bowden got Florida State going, and then Miami exploded. Florida was the last of the three to kind of get moving, and maybe that was part conference competition, but still, yeah, there were decades before that where the flagship school in the state really didn't get much traction. So it's mystifying why that was the case. And then it took, you know, one of the greatest coaches we've probably ever seen, Steve Spurrier, to get it up and running. And then Urban Meyer, also one of the greatest coaches we've ever seen, to sustain it. So I think they probably did create a little bit of an illusion of, you know, it just happens here. And it hasn't. And why that is, I don't know, Dan. I can't answer your question.
I don't know either. You know, when a school is in this situation, oftentimes where it's, you know, about the search for a coach or searching for a coach, I know that administrators often ask themselves, like, when they're trying to decide, you know, who to hire or who to fire, is what should we be? You know, like what are the expectations level at this place? Steve Spurrier, what he did to raise the expectation level at Florida is something that that impacts negatively most other coaches that have followed him, I feel like. And that's how it is certainly at many other places like Alabama. But Steve Spurrier was a incredible football coach. And he did a lot of winning at a lot of places, including Duke in South Carolina. So he was able to do winning virtually everywhere for at least a stretch. And so you do wonder, now I know Urban won, obviously, but again, he won everywhere that he was. So what is Florida? And it's often one of those schools where the discussion of is this a good job or how good a job is this? Florida leads that discussion in a lot of ways because it's always the one that people in the industry kind of argue over how good it really is, the job. Like, it looks like it should be good because what Steve Spurrier and Urban Meyer did and the resources and recruiting in Florida and in the fan interest and all this stuff. But then there are some negatives of, you know, like facilities, right? We've all been on the Florida campus. And although they've improved and are improving, right, they aren't like the best anywhere in the best in the league. And the fans there, and there's a few fan bases like this. I would throw in Auburn and maybe LSU, perhaps Tennessee, that just remind me, they all remind me of each other. And they are just wild. And their passion sometimes is probably goes a little too far, I think. But that's how it is. That's what it is like there. And so I don't know. I don't know how good of a job it is and what they're supposed to be, but 5-7 is not what they're supposed to be.
I don't know the answer to that either. Are they unreasonable to expect to be national championship contenders? Obviously not, because it's been done. I mean, it's Florida. They have their three big schools in the state, but it's a huge state. There's tons of people there. I know a lot of them are not... not going to the villages and recruiting a lot of the villages high school. Probably not producing a whole lot other than some good pickleball players or something, golf cart driving. The population's a little, but there's obviously enormous amounts of talent in the state of Florida. And Florida State and Miami are more than capable of shooting themselves in the foot for periods of time. Generally these things go in cycles. Whoever's winning big then gets caught in a massive scandal and then they fall back down. The other two rise up a little bit, but like their backyard is kind of Orlando. I mean, they're really well situated, so much talent, so close to Tampa, so close to Jacksonville, besides the whole state. I don't know. It's always been baffling to me how they have so many five win seasons historically that you wouldn't see at some of these others. I mean, I think it's, I don't know what it is. It's not lack of fan. I mean, facilities, I guess, somewhat, but they've got a lot. Kids want to go there from all over the country. I don't know. I don't know what the expectation is. I'm looking, they have 14-28 all time against Alabama. They're losing record against Georgia, losing record against Auburn, losing record against LSU. Well, that's pretty close. 33-34-3. And then they beat up on everybody else. Tied even record with Ole Miss. So I don't know. I think Florida should be one of the best teams in the country, press programs in the country. I think if you're looking at a 12-team playoff, their floor should be like 8-4, you know? Like it's like Penn State has consistency but not greatness. And Florida has greatness but not consistency. Which would you rather have?
Yeah, it's fascinating. And I will say, you know, was it the pandemic year where they were, or maybe the 2019, where they had this great start to the season and the dude threw the shoe against LSU and it all blew up.
And yeah, that's the shoe game.
The one thing with Florida, it seems like when it gets sideways fast. And things just fall, like the McElwain era just collapsed.
Yeah.
In breathtaking time. The Mullen era, which looked pretty good for a while, collapsed. And it's just, I don't know whether that is a fan environment to which Ross was talking about, right, or something institutionally or what, but
you think Gator fan is crazier than other fans?
I don't,
compared them to the others,
I just wonder, like, you see these guys that seemed like pretty solid coaches who just all of a sudden kind of lose it and seasons go just completely south and all of a sudden they're fired, you know? It's very odd. Different dynamic there than some other places.
Yeah, it's kind of like there when it starts going south, right? It just picks up serious steam and continues that direction. And maybe it is, the fan pressure cooker type of environment there, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what else it could be, but that's, I don't know. That's how I view it. But it is, in the last few years, it's especially been weird. You know, McElwain's obviously whole tenure was an odd thing. And then the way Mullen's tenure ended, the way things went south there. And I was at the Shoe game. They were rolling. I remember visiting. That was 2020. That was during COVID, the COVID season. Had they won that game against LSU and had they upset Alabama? Alabama in the SEC championship game, which, yes, would have been certainly difficult. That team, you know, ended up winning the national title, going 12-0 and winning every SEC game, all the 10 they played. But they, if y'all remember, they competed with them in the SEC championship game, like into the second half. I mean, so they beat LSU and they happened to close out Alabama in that game. They were going to be playing for the national championship. They were going to be in the playoff, most likely. And so you see what happened with the Shoe, and they never rebounded from the Shoe. And that was just a crazy game. And I was there to like witness it in the fog, and it was just weird. And it's like they'd never rebounded from that. And then I remember the following season, to start the season, maybe game two, they played Alabama. They hosted Alabama at home. And I went back for that game. And I think they lost to Alabama by a point or 2 points, I want to say, 32-30 or something like that. It was this tight game where they again, you know, almost beat Saban, but then came up short in the end. And they just didn't recover from these games, the program. And Napier's hiring, I think anybody would have said that Billy Napier was the best available during the cycle 3 years ago and was the great fit for Florida. He had turned down a lot of different jobs over previous years, Billy Napier did. It just hasn't so far worked out like a lot of people said. Now, part of that was timing, right? He started during this COVID period, or during the post-COVID period and the NIL period, where you guys remember they had all the Rashada and the NIL situation with the collective and all of that craziness. So again, just more craziness.
Maybe Florida. They are crazier. Florida man. I mean, it is
Florida man.
Literally, yeah, by definition.
Yeah. So, not to change this in a different direction, but a little bit. Given the fact that it's the SEC and everybody just takes each other's coaches, do they take Kiffin or Drinkwitz to replace Napier?
Oh, you want that. Coming in after Napier do might be great because the schedule gets easier.
Yeah, can't get harder.
I don't know. I think Lane wants that. I think Lane's.
I think Lane's had his eyes on Florida.
Yeah, interesting.
Pass. Yeah.
Maybe. It's an appealing place. There's only so many places you can win a national championship, and multiple coaches have won a national championship.
Right.
Florida certainly feels like that place. It is that place, and certainly I don't know. I don't know what it is about why they haven't consistently been good, but I can see why everyone says, yeah, I'll go win there. I mean, what the heck?
Sure.
So certainly there will be some serious, could be some serious poaching. The president, they brought back their old president. His name is Kent Fuchs, I guess. That's how you pronounce it. I was glad when he retired. It's a scary one. Last name, F-U-C-H-S. Kent, like the way I pronounce things, that can go can't. It can go wrong real quick. So bring back Ben Sass, please. I could spell that. I could say that one. This one scares me if I'm not. I got to be on edge.
Got to be prepared,
Fuchs.
Dan.
Yeah, Fuchs. I'm. It might not even be the way. I'm not saying it.
It's actually, I think it's Fox.
Fox?
It's actually pronounced F-O-X. It's pronounced like it's F-O-X, I think.
I know how I want to pronounce it, and that's not the
that's
way.
That's not it, I know.
So I got to be real careful.
I'm pretty certain it's Fox. It's an odd
danger
one.
Danger zone, third rail.
I got a friend whose last name is spelled the same way, and it's pronounced Fox.
No Fox
what,
to
at
give.
At least that's what they go with. It might be
okay, Fox.
I don't know.
Back in the old country.
Did we talk about the situation with SAS? Because that could impact things too, right? I mean, you got a presidential change and all that stuff. Ben SAS.
These presidents don't run these schools.
Stepping down. You,
Florida
well,
man
I mean,
runs the school.
I think
they want him gone.
Rich
He's
Florida
gone.
Man.
And if you're the way, you're gone. I don't care about the presidents. I was just making a pronunciation joke. All right, next guy, Dave Aranda, Baylor. Won the Big 12 three seasons ago. Then went 6-7, 3-9, and Waco is restless. They do have t-shirts, though, that say we pay players, so maybe things are on the up. I thought Aranda did a great job early. Looked like a good hire. Not quite. Now, here's a school where it has not always been easy to win. In fact, they used to be horrible. They are a resourced program now in the Big 12, smack dab in the middle of Texas. What do you think? I'll go with you, Pat, on Dave Aranda's possibilities here.
That's another interesting one where, I mean, there are so many people that, like, if you were around Dave Aranda, you're like, that guy is so impressive. What an interesting guy. What a smart guy. What great perspective. And he's had some success, but just not enough of it. And reminds me a little bit of like Bill Curry, where you thought this guy is almost like too much of a good guy or has too much perspective to be a football coach. He should perhaps, you know, be doing something else to help save the country. But he is a football coach and you got to win, and he's not. And the Big 12 has been just in this kind of state of flux where, hey, all these different teams have risen up, and it's been a few years now since Baylor did. 2021, obviously, they had the really good season. The last couple of years, their offense has fallen apart. I mean, last year they averaged 23 points a game. That was last or tied for last in the Big 12. And they've really rebooted. And you want to talk about throwing some pressure on a quarterback and on a coordinator. So you make the changes, and you are bringing in Jake Spavital, who's had some great success as a coordinator, was the head coach at Texas State, didn't have great success as a head coach, but he's the new coordinator. And then you bring in Daquan Finn from Toledo, who's won a lot of games, dual threat kind of guy. And you see if you can plug him in as a graduate transfer and save the regime, so to speak. So a big roll of the dice there. You're bringing in a MAC quarterback and a fired Sun Belt head coach and saying, let's fix it. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. You know, Pat kind of nailed it with Dave Aranda. He, when you talk to Dave, he's unlike any other football coach that I've ever talked to. And it seems like he should be, in a laboratory somewhere, like creating the next vaccine to heal the world. And when he was hired, I think one of the things kind of used against the hiring was how unique he was. The questions surrounded, could he be this? Because he's kind of an introvert, very much so, I think. And could he be this kind of outgoing leader guy type of deal? And he evolved kind of into that. He changed, and they had great success. And then, there was a drop off. It'll be interesting to see if, you know, all these changes do work. This is kind of like a, I think I called it a bonus season in the story, because he was, I think there was a decision at Baylor that was very, very close last December to being made to change head coaches. It was just as close as, any other one in the country we talk about Billy Napier, that being the hottest seat that could elicit a domino effect. But Dave Aranda's seat, probably the hottest. Baylor's probably the hottest in the country because it was almost done in December. And you look at their one thing that, that Dave Aranda doesn't have to face is a schedule like Billy Napier has. the schedule is isn't the most difficult. So the toughest game is really at Utah, and that's a non-conference game because I think it was previously on the books before the expansion. So there, it's doable. It's doable to get to that 8-4, 9-3, or even better mark.
All right, more hot list right after this. All right, back at it. SEC, back in the SEC on this list. And I got to say, the list is not that long. It's kind of interesting. I don't know if anyone can afford to fire a coach anymore. Cuts into the Naples Ritz-Carlton budget too much. It's a very expensive hire. Sam Pittman, our man Sam, had a big 9-4 season his second year, 2021. I was kind of a, you know, went with the offensive line coach from Georgia. It was a little bit of a wild card, but huge personality, likable guy. Clearly, like, you know, what's the, want to have a beer with a coach in college football? Well, you're not, probably not having one. Probably not having one. But since then, they've won only, they're 4-8 lately in the SEC. They haven't got it going. Buyout is only $8 to $12 million. Fans are obviously want better. I think there are expectations at Arkansas that are a little more reasonable, but then again, they also have John Calipari coming in to kind of siphon off some of the, probably some donor money and all that stuff.
Don't underestimate that part.
Underestimate Coach Cal, because I'll tell you what, they can win a national title in that a lot quicker. It's a lot quicker than they can in football. Ross, Coach Pittman, what do we got?
Yeah, Pat can talk a little bit more about the Cal part, but that is definitely like a big storyline here is Coach Cal at Arkansas, and I don't want to say draining, pulling resources away maybe from things that maybe will go to the football program. But I'll let Pat talk a little bit more about what he's seen in that at Kentucky and Memphis, because others definitely have. So Pittman was another situation like Aranda last year, last December, where I think a decision to change was very, very close to happening, and ultimately kind of a bonus year. And then hired Bobby Petrino. Right. So Petrino's back as offensive coordinator, back at Arkansas, and as offensive coordinator, not head coach, at least not head coach yet. Many believe that maybe he will end up back there in some way in the big chair. It depends probably on how the season goes. Hard to see Arkansas rehiring Bobby Petrino if, you know, the offense this year is terrible, or if the team this year is so terrible that you can't do that. And then obviously Pittman could keep his job if the team is good enough. So it's kind of one of those weird things. It's you know, an odd situation there. You wonder how much control, you know, Pittman will give Petrino of the offense, because obviously, for all his faults that Pat knows well about, Bobby Petrino is a pretty great offensive mind in play caller. So it'll be curious to see, you know, can Bobby Petrino save Sam Pittman's job, or take it?
If I were Sam, I'd be driving in every day like, okay, is Petrino with me or against me? You know, you walk into the office and Bobby's like in there, you know, measuring, all right, we're going to get new curtains in here when I take over the head coach's office. I think they had to, obviously they had to make a significant change and take a big swing at improving an offense that had kind of stalled, even with KJ Jefferson and some of the weapons that they had there. I mean, they scored 3 points last year against Mississippi State. They scored 10 against Auburn. They scored 14 against Missouri. At the end, by then, the student had gotten away from them. 20 against Mississippi, 22 against Texas A&M. It was a bad year last year. Their wins were Western Carolina, Kent State, Florida by a point, which helped put Billy Napier in the situation he's in, and Florida International. I mean, three, you know, toss-off victories that you schedule, and then one road win by a point. So that's clearly not going to be good enough. Sam Pittman, great guy, a lot of fun. Saw him at the Kentucky Derby. He was there backing Mystic Dan, who won at long odds. So maybe this is the year for Sam Pittman to win at long odds and keep the job. But they're bringing in new quarterback, Talen Green from Boise State, replacing one big athletic dual threat guy with another big athletic dual threat guy, but more importantly, replacing the coordinator. And we'll see what Petrino can do there. Interesting. They get like Texas to come to Fayetteville. Who else? Does Oklahoma come to Fayetteville?
LSU. No, this is this is an incredible schedule they got.
Yeah, they have all the toughies at home.
Here's what they have. I don't know that he's got to win a ton. He's got to give them some feel-good moments.
Yeah.
First off, they play at Oklahoma State. Now, if you do not geography, Arkansas and Oklahoma are border states. They do border. You don't and Fayetteville to Stillwater is a couple hours, right? Like Tulsa's kind of in between. This is a big that they got that rivalry. They got A&M down in Arlington. They get Tennessee in Fayetteville. Another border team. They get LSU in Fayetteville. They get Ole Miss in Fayetteville. And they get Texas in Fayetteville.
Yeah.
And then they go to Missouri. If he pulls off a couple of like wild celebratory victories in that stretch, I don't know how many he's got to win.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, would that count?
Maybe. Just win the right ones, yeah.
You win the right games. Now, if you're winning those games, I assuming you're beating UAB and Pine Bluff and Auburn and all that. So we'll see. But if he pulls off like, hey, man, we beat Tennessee and Texas in our stadium and the whole place went crazy and everyone's feeling good. Yeah, we only went 6-6, but, you know, we win the right ones. Now, he also may get absolutely bulldozed by those guys. So we'll see.
I will say just real quick on the Calipari dynamic. I do think that, you know, part of bringing him in was a all in booster commitment. We are going to support basketball and make a swing at a national title. So how much NIL money is there in Arkansas? Well, there's a lot in some areas, but if the chicken money is all going to basketball, not as much of it's going to football, or you have to fight for it, how attractive is that? Think about life after Pittman and Cal, wherever Cal is, has been the top dog, is accustomed to being the top dog, and will tell everyone he's the top dog. Hence the battle he had last year with Mark Stoops at Kentucky, where he declared it was a foot basketball school, not incorrectly, but still he did it in a way that was abrasive to the football coach, and the AD did not back Cal on that. So if you are trying to hire, say Sam Pittman doesn't make it and you're trying to hire another football coach, you're going to have to convince somebody, hey, we're a football and a basketball school here, and John Calipari isn't going to suck up all the oxygen in Fayetteville.
I think he will be less on that at Arkansas than Kentucky. Kentucky, it was just true. Now, the football program's gotten really good, but it is a basketball school. I think it'll be less of that. But in terms of the money, look, if you're an NIL booster kind of guy, and it's like, hey, man, we need you to chip in 100K. We need you to chip in this. We need your business to do whatever. And you go, well, I got football. And Pittman's going, I got a bead on this, like, you know, 3-star from the Metroplex, and Cal's like, I got the number 2 player in the car. I got Carlos Boozer's kids. And you go, they're ranked 2 and 8. I get them both. And you go, I'll take in Carlos Boozer's kids and we're going to win a national. I mean, it's just return on investment. And I think that he's in on all the best players. He brought tons of guys from Boogie Fland, and these guys aren't coming from New York City to Fayetteville, just nor should they. Just, you know, because they love the outdoor nature, you know, want to hike through the Ozarks. But he's going to say when Cal wants something, and he's not only going to be very good at getting what he wants, but he's going to be pointing to something very tangible, like, look at these kids I can get. And I need your money. And football, you're going, maybe I get this guy. And you're like, you're still so far down the rock pile. What does it even matter, right? So we'll see how much money there is.
Well, and you look at the Arkansas job, and just like the conversation we had of what should the Florida job, what should the realistic expectations be for Florida football? You know, I think the job has its difficulties at Florida. We talked about, we know what the expectation is there, right? It's championships and stuff. But Arkansas, right? Like, you know, Houston Nutt won a lot of games. Bobby Petrino won a lot of games there. But the SEC, just the league they're in, just continues to get more difficult. And they continue kind of to, resource-wise, I mean, it's just like facts and numbers. They slide down the pecking order in resources. So what is the expectation level? What should it be? What should it be at Arkansas? We know basketball-wise what it probably is, that it's pretty high. But I don't know if football-wise that realistically Arkansas should be, you know, 10, 11 games a year. But I think they're like a lot of bottom half teams in the SEC where at least once every 3 years, you know, give us a run to maybe competing and contending for a championship, or in this case, a playoff, right? Arkansas is one of those teams, like, to me, like a Penn State or Wisconsin, maybe maybe even like an Ole Miss or something, where you can now, with the expanded playoff era, have realistic expectations of getting one of those final spots if you even go 9-3 or 10-2, if you have one of those years. So that maybe that should, everybody needs to set their expectations where they should be, depending on the resources of your school.
Yeah. All right, there's a few more. Well, I don't even know if we need Justin Wilcox at Cal. I don't know if we've ever had a Cal fan listen to this show. maybe.
There actually are a couple.
There are some.
You know,
what do they call that? Is it called Cheapskate Hill, where you go up on the?
Yeah.
You don't even go in the stadium. That's my favorite part of there. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt. The Vanderbilt coach is always on here, aren't they? Like, pretty much. Yeah. There was a couple years.
Seems like every 3 to 4 years, the Vanderbilt
James
coach.
Franklin
finds
James
his
Franklin was
his
Franklin.
James yeah, Franklin broke it, but otherwise.
Otherwise.
Yeah.
Kalani Sitake, the BYU coach, was kind of interesting on here. I agree with you, Ross, said be hard to see him part with their own guy. But new deal. I would like to at least see him get some, maybe 3 years into the Big 12. Totally different job that has changed. Other warm. You have them as warm, these four. Virginia with Tony Elliott. I think that's fair. South Carolina, Shane Beamer. My God, he was the hottest coach last year. West Virginia's Neil Brown. He got from hot to potentially warm. Yeah. So that's good.
Right. He cooled. He cooled. After the 8 wins? I think they won 8 wins last year. Surprised a lot of folks.
Yeah. And then Pat Narduzzi at Pitt. No, we cannot lose Pat Narduzzi. those are, and then you got a bunch of group of five. So
yeah, Narduzzi, and then won the ACC. Obviously, what, 2-3 years ago, and then since then, just haven't been what I think they want. That's another one that's it's hard to see them parting ways with him unless it gets really, really bad. But certainly he's. The Pitt job is buzzing enough among the industry that I think there's probably something there that they need to show improvement and win. And then Dan, there's probably like 15 group of five jobs, right, that are where the coaches really need to win there. We don't have to talk about them all, but there's a lot of jobs that could open at the G5 level. And think about this. There's a lot of jobs that can open at the G5 level, not because of a firing, but because a coach leaves for a power conference school coordinator job, which we saw 2 last year, 3 if you count the UCLA, Chip Kelly, but 2 last year, South Alabama, Kane Womack went to Alabama as coordinator, and Mo Linguist left Buffalo as head coach for a coordinator job, also at Alabama. Talking to folks in the industry, they could expect to see 1, 2, maybe even as many as 3 more of those this year. It's going to be a continuation as the gap in resources continues to widen between the P4 and the G5.
We'll do a little quarterback news here. It's kind of interesting. Malachi Nelson, who was once, I think somebody had him number one in the country as quarterback, went to USC, left after one season, went to Boise State. He just got beat out for the starting quarterback job by Maddox Madsen. I don't know whether this means Malachi Nelson is not that good, or it means Maddox Madsen, which is a fantastic name, by the way.
It's a great name.
Is really good, and Boise is a group of five, probably the favorite of the group of five, I think along kind of with Memphis to make that playoff. Thought on that, but man, we'll see. Malachi's career is not certainly over because he lost a QB battle in the preseason, but interesting shift there for Nelson. And what do you think about your Broncos, Pat?
Yeah, I hope Malachi Nelson has a successful college career, but sometimes people get overrated early on and it, you know, can't necessarily live up to the billing. That's certainly not the first one. You remember Hunter Johnson was supposed to be the top quarterback recruit in the country, went to Clemson, couldn't get it done there, went to Northwestern, couldn't get it done there. Gunnar Kiel back in the day, bounced around a few different schools. So evaluations can be wrong. And also there are times for, and again, I am generalizing here. I don't know if this is the case with Malachi Nelson, and I do hope he has a good career. But sometimes when you are the dude and you show up in college and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm getting my rear end kicked a little bit, you go the other way. And it's like, oh, your confidence kind of collapses. And I've seen that happen with a lot of highly rated recruits in a lot of different sports. But Maddox Madsen, I looked it up here. He was his according to Rivals, his scholarship offers were Boise State and New Mexico. That's it. And he chose well to go to Boise, and now he's the starter on what should be a pretty good team. So be interesting to see if he can take Boise and make a run at that G5 playoff spot.
All right, we'll be back right after this with a good one. All right, also news, college football playoff has announced per ESPN that it will no longer use as a tiebreaker whether someone has won a conference title. So I guess this would be in seeding. I don't really know how this matters.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. I mean, it was kind of like a right? Because conference champions get an automatic berth, but they get the top four of the five, get the top four seeds.
Except for the group of five. So yeah. I guess they're saying nothing.
Yeah.
Just take your 12 spot and shut up.
Yeah.
Group of five champ. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's
take
it.
Your all 12 right, spot so, while you can before we take that away from you, too.
Yeah, tiebreakers and strength of schedule and head-to-head results. Ross, what's the latest on the nervous group five? We'll do this briefly.
Yeah, so I think they're actually meeting today. I mean, by the time you listen to this podcast that would drop Monday afternoon, the group of five commissioners will have met or finishing up a meeting in Dallas together. I think that, you know, Dan, through the spring and summer, the power conference commissioners have decided a lot amongst themselves. You look at the college football playoff distribution model and situation, they basically decided that on their own. You look at the settlement, the NCAA house settlement, they decided a lot of that. They were the only ones really in the room with the NCAA lawyers and all that, deciding much of that. And so I think the group of five commissioners are getting together on their own to maybe decide some things on their own when it comes to their membership, their 65, 63 or so schools in the group of five and what their future holds. Because certainly there is fear that the automatic berth for the group of five of the fifth conference championship AQ will eventually go away. It can't over the next 2 years, right? Obviously this year and next year, these are 2 years where we will have the same format. But starting in 2026, we'll have a different format. And though there was a commitment when they extended the deal 8 years or 6 years, they extended it these next 2 years and then six more. So total of eight. When they extended it, there was a kind of a agreement that they would keep the current format of AQs. But that can change, right? In the Big Ten and SEC have, in ESPN, the TV partner, have control over the format, basically. They have power to make the format what they would like to see it. And I think, and the group of five commissioners know this, and they've said it, I think over the next 2, 3, even 4 years, because there's a look into the contract after the 2027 playoff where more changes can be made. Over the next 2, 3, 4 years, the group of five teams need to have good showings, right? They need to be certainly ranked in the top 25. They need to show that they deserve, I guess, that AQ spot. And I think a lot of the talk in Dallas among the G5 commissioners is, what else can we do in the postseason? Can we create, how else can we create viewership and attention and even generate more revenue for G5? And one of those ways, as I mentioned in that story that they will discuss or have discussed today, is that a kind of football version of an NIT using the bowl system. Kind of have a secondary championship of some sort. But they'll talk about a great many other things, how the Cal case impacts the G5, opting in or opting out, you know, of the settlement and all that stuff.
Where's the G5 meeting? Like a roadway inn in LaGrange, Indiana or something?
If I had to guess, it's probably at a hotel in a hotel convention center, maybe a hotel at the airport.
Courtyard, yeah. Phoenix Airport.
DFW Airport, Weston.
Yeah.
I don't even know about maybe they got the Marriott points or something, Bonvoy. They're not at the Ritz. They're not at the Ritz. No.
That's the nature of college sports right now. There's the rich group and there's the not rich group. And, I don't like it. I've said that 400 times on the podcast. I do not like the power grab that continues to exclude nearly half of the FBS. It's like you've already got enough, but you're still, you know, you've got 11 twelfths of the pie, but by God, we got to have 12 twelfths. So I'm a little bit also put off, I guess, or concerned about the group of five making plans to almost surrender. And maybe they're just reading the room and saying, well, you know, like the G5 NIT, the idea I don't like, because nobody cares about the NIT in basketball. And I don't think it'll be long before nobody cares about the NIT in football, if there is such a thing. I would still do everything you could to position yourself as viable, valuable, and worthy of 1/12th of the playoff and pursue that angle and as far as you can, as long as you can.
Playoffs better with a group of five.
Yeah, and I think they want that, right? Like one of the conversation pieces is not getting rid of that spot, not relinquishing that spot, and certainly not relinquishing the $115 million annually, roughly $2.5 to $2 million per G5 school that they'll get from the CFP. So I don't think they want to relinquish that. I think there is a thought of what can we do for our other schools? Is there other ways to generate revenue? And if it does come a time at some point when we lose that spot, what else do we have? And I think that's where the conversations land. And in you know, we talked about this in the spring, private equity and their entrance into college athletics, college football. Is there some PE options out there that they can pursue? I think that'll be a conversation as well.
All right, we got a people's court that actually involves football, kind of. Yeah, no kidding. College football, even.
Okay.
Michigan State has been sued. They're sued
I did
by Floris Van Plant, the owner of PL. I don't know how to say this. PALLANDT. We should have a side pod. One day we have subscribers. If it's no longer free, I'll just have where I just try to pronounce things. The side pod. Anyway, this guy, he owns and operates the Quiz Channel on YouTube. And famously, before last year's Michigan State-Michigan game, when everyone was fired up because Michigan was like days removed from the Connor Stallions news breaking, and Michigan State was going to lose, but they could wallow in the shame of their rival, right? Instead, they put the quiz channel up on the Spartan Stadium scoreboards pregame to entertain the fans that had arrived really early. And one of the questions was, what country was Hitler born? Adolf Hitler. And of course, you know, your natural reaction would be Germany. It's trivia. It turns out to be Austria, right? Many people would know that anyway. But, you know, kind of a quiz channel, bar trivia kind of question, right? Where was Hitler born? Kind of clever question. Works if you're sitting at home alone watching the quiz channel on YouTube. Probably works if you're at a bar. Not so much inside a stadium when you then... the quiz channel flashes a giant picture of Hitler.
Branding. There's your branding really. For Michigan State.
People were offended, shocked, dismayed. I don't know, whatever. I kind of get it. So a big picture of Hitler appeared. And then classic Michigan State fashion. It's kind of funny. They're in it. They're in getting all this heat when they weren't even the ones stealing the signs. They're like, what is this guy? Like Michigan stuff. Anyway, Flores here, he is suing Michigan State for $150,000 in damages plus legal fees, saying that they infringed on his quiz channel and his company was subject to disparagement and ridicule for Michigan State's publicly showing the question of Hitler, and which, again, wasn't really appropriate for a mass audience at a football game where you're just kind of sitting around quietly with your family waiting for kickoff, not at the bar or at in your privacy of your own home watching the YouTube channel. So he's seeking the money. Michigan State has not responded yet. Justice 40, does Flores here, does he deserve $150,000 because Michigan State put his thing up on the board?
Well, the ultimate lesson here, be careful what you outsource.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're outsourcing your trivia program, make sure you know.
I kind of get it, though. Like, they're probably just like, put the quiz show up there. Put some trivia up there. What? Right. How bad could it be?
You know, like, a meme of puppies or something up there, something else, or just a picture of Sparty, you know, or a video of Tom Izzo snarling around on a sideline for an hour.
They do love Sparty. Yeah, just show Sparty walking Sparty. Campus and stuff. And yeah.
So given all that, though, no, I'm sorry. I'm not siding with this dude and his YouTube channel, because I mean, like, if you're pumping out Hitler content and you want people to access it and use it, this could happen, and you have to live with the blowback of that. So whatever this dude's name is, no, case dismissed. You do not get your $150,000. At least it's a reasonable suit. He's not suing for like $4 million or something.
Yeah, he needs the Pop-Tart lawyer. I mean, like, this is a terrible sum. Michigan State, $150,000.
Yeah. $150,000, you shake that out of the hot dog.
We got
50-something thousand.
Mm-hmm. It would raise tuition for $3, everybody. You got that done.
I agree with Pat. Also, of all the trivia questions, I mean, how many? There are hundreds of millions, maybe, I mean, perhaps billions of trivia questions out there. This has to be the one picked, flashed over the Jumbotron. It's just amazing. Very college football. So college football.
I felt bad for Michigan State on this because it's such an honest mistake. I know people went crazy. And yes, we should not be flashing pictures of Hitler into football stadiums. Yes, I get it. But like, you can see where the mistake, it was question 28 of 40. Mm. It's like this G-rated trivia YouTube channel. And then like, think about they have yet to say who was responsible. They just said that employee was disciplined. I don't know what that hit a guard Sparty for a week, or like Izzo ran him through some gonna run with Izzo in the morning. I don't know what happened, but that person's you talk about their reaction of all the trivia questions. Like the one before it could have been like, what's the state flower of Indiana or something? Yeah. Like, I, you know, right? Or Michigan. Who knows? Just terrible situation. No, you don't get 150. He's gotten more publicity. I said his YouTube channel like five times. It's up on his up on the board is his logo, the quiz channel, getting shown to all the people at Spartan Stadium. And since it was the Michigan game, it was actually full. There was a lot of people there, although not that early in the game. It's not like just some other game we wouldn't have. I have Michigan State's solution. You want to entertain the masses before the game. I am granting you permission to put the College Football Inquirer up there on that Spartan Stadium board.
Oh, yeah.
There what do you think go. Of that, Ishbia? Put that thing up there. See, you want to play the CFE and we get the publicity? We'll take it. Quiz show guy is biting the hand that feeds him.
That's right. We might even say something nice about Michigan State if we know we've got a deal.
Dude, I mean, we will talk one time. Anyone plays our show on their stadium during the game, you're getting the small sample Heisman. You're getting everything. That's our highest honor here. You'll get it all. We are going to be so in the bag for you. Do your part. It's the membership drive week. Come on, people.
That's right. Maybe a coffee mug, too.
You want to bet? You want to pay to make the coffee mug? That's on you. You keep mentioning this coffee mug, you're going to have to pay for it.
I'll just grab one out of the cabinet downstairs and Sharpie and write College Football Inquirer on it and send it to somebody.
We don't have merch.
No, we have no merch.
We have no merch. We don't have much. We have this. Free inflation beaters. We'll be back later this week. Week zero. Get pumped. Talk to you later.